Welcome to Charmed Life, a radio show discussing spirituality, magic, and the unconditional love of the universe. Thanks for tuning in. And I'm your host, Trisha Carr. Thank you for joining me today. A very special show. I guess I love all of my shows equally, just like you would your children, but this is another special show. I'm super excited to experience it with you. And I would like to say, all of you who may be listening or watching, just to remind you of how you can connect with the show all the different ways. One is you can watch it live at 11 a.m. Pacific on any of my Facebook or Twitter outlets. You can find that by searching at Trisha Carr Charm or at Charmed Life 1111. And you can also find it on ubnradio.com/channel-1. That's how you can connect with us live. And then you can watch the replay or the archive on YouTube, youtube.com/Trisha Carr. I put up other videos there as well. And then, of course, on listen on the podcast outlet on our RSS feed, you can find by searching Charmed Life with Trisha Carr, whether you use iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. We are on all of those places. I would love for you to subscribe, comment, like, share, and especially on the podcast. If you listen to the podcast, I would love it if you go in and actually do a review on iTunes. You could even just do 5 stars and say, yippee, like one word, 5 stars, if you feel that way. If you feel yippee, I'm not asking you to lie. But that definitely does help us to continue to connect our light with one another. And I would just appreciate it so much. But I do appreciate you being here with me. I love you very much. And with that said, I would love to welcome for the third time on Charmed Life, intuitive empath, writer, counselor, teacher, designer, author of such books as Transparency, Seeing Through to Our Expanded Human Capacity, Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention, The Intuitive Way, The Definitive Guide to Increasing Your Awareness, and one of my personal favorites, the way that I found her first was Frequency, The Power of Personal Vibration. And she is Penny Pierce. Welcome, Penny.
It's so good to be back with you.
You honor me. Thank you. Well, I would like to say up front how you can get in touch with Penny and the kind of work. What have you been doing? What work have you been into and how are you connecting with folks, if you'd like to share that?
I've been doing workshops in Europe and also in New York, and sort of just getting caught up. It's been a pretty strange year, I think.
Exactly. Yes. So, yeah. Up and down, just, right?
Yeah, just trying to just get the information out and sort of synthesizing all the material from all my books into maybe one really larger kind of training aimed maybe more at leadership and influencers.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that's in progress.
I love that. I think that's very important work because, well, you know, I work with the natural realms. I work with nature spirits and the like, and they are always talking about how it's really important for people who are connecting, I would just say, you know, with the universe or with nature from their true essence to the true essence of the universe, that all of the sensitive people have some more of that power influence because it's, you know, that's how we're going to shift in on grander scales. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, it's been an intense year, and I think that intensity is causing us all to be really sensitive, almost oversensitive at times, very highly empathic, you know. So I don't know if you want to talk about that later. We can. Just, I don't know what's on your mind today, but anywhere you want to go is fine.
Well, I love to go with the flow. And I think that's a great place to start because that's certainly how I kind of started in this part of my life and work, is my high sensitivity starting to really just, like, you know, shake my cage. So yes, I would love to talk about that. How are you experiencing people asking you those questions, or how you're coaching people? What do we have to say to people who are feeling very, very sensitive, maybe to the point where it's uncomfortable? What does that mean?
What does it mean? Well, I mean, I'm noticing with most of my clients, they're talking about a couple things. One, that they do feel like they're highly empathic now, like they're picking up information from everything around them. And a lot of the energy that's being released right now is pretty negative. And we can talk about that too, because that has to do with, I think, the process going on the planet right now. But so there's a symptom of that, which is that oversensitivity, or I sometimes call it ultra sensitivity. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing. It's just that we don't really have the skill sets yet to understand how to work with it in a positive, productive way. And then the other thing is that people feel like they're really standing in a doorway or on an edge, a leading edge. They're about ready to step off the cliff into a whole new reality of a new part of their work, you know, is coming in, or their destiny even is coming in. They feel it. They sense it's coming, but they can't exactly see what it looks like. And I'm right there with everybody else. I could feel it. This time period, I said to somebody, it's kind of like a pregnant moment, you know, where time to take up your staff and walk forward into the world and you know, be committed to helping the planet, I think. Mm. Not that we weren't before, but that even this is like a whole new phase of it, something much more important. And not to make excuses anymore, to say, oh, well, maybe later or after something else happens. Mm. It's more like right now, this is a very important time.
The preparation has been done. You've passed the test.
Right. Yeah, it's really the preparation is done. Mm-hmm. And you've been practicing for a while. And now it's let that practice integrate and move on and step into the wave and let it take you. And in some ways, you don't have to really know what it's about. That there's a kind of sense of trust that in the wave and in your own soul, that you know what you're doing. You know what you're built for. You know why you're here. And you are going to do that. Do you know? It's not like, oh, if I don't do things the right way, it won't happen. It will happen if you step forward.
You know? And as you said, some folks don't even, like, you might be saying step forward. And they're like, into what? I don't know what that looks like.
Right. Which I think it starts with a decision.
Yes.
And really. To say, okay, I'm available. Mm-hmm. I want to help. I want to move forward. I want to find out what I really am all about. I want to find out my hidden gifts, my hidden talents. And I'll take on the challenges. I'll work with surprise, mm-hmm. you know, and just show it to me.
Yes.
Let me see what's next and then let me do it and I'll do it, you know.
In each moment.
Yeah, I used to say to myself, what is my next courageous act? Mm. You know, and after you come to a sort of a lull at the end of a phase of accomplishment, perhaps, or of doing something for a while, and maybe you're a little bit bored. And it's at that point that I think we rejuvenate ourselves or reinvent ourselves. And that's where I usually try to look at what is courageous.
Mm, that's you know, fantastic. Yes.
You know, like that means it's something I might be a little unfamiliar with or a little afraid of, or something that I'm not sure that I know how to do very well, but I'm going to, if it comes to mind, then I'm going to go ahead and try it.
And so far as that courageous step or that courageous decision even, which it may be, I don't know what it is necessarily. When you and I were discussing this show topic, are you experiencing a lot of people who, your clients or your students, that this inner sense of having a very big life purpose? And it almost, if you feel that, I know myself, it feels like, well, that must be arrogant or I'm crazy, because every single one of us on this planet can't have a huge purpose, so why me? How is that something you're finding?
I think that is, let's say, kind of common, but I think it has a little bit to do with ego and a little bit to do with soul. Mm. You know, there's a certain thing happening right now, I think, on the planet where a lot of people are just coming into a real experience of the true self. And that's why I think that me, me, me thing has been happening, where everybody wants to take selfies of themselves and see who they are, you know, kind of get in the limelight and be famous for 10 minutes or whatever. That's ego, right? That's that sense of identification with something externally. But I think that leads to an identification with yourself as the soul. You don't, you know, and I see this happening now. It's like, we don't have a soul. We are the soul. Mm. You know, if you think you have a soul and you talk about my soul, it's, you know, it's like, it's a balloon floating at the end of a string or something, that you're separate from it, looking at it. But as you identify with it and actually let it merge with you, and then you realize, oh, this is what I am, and I'm here, you know, and I am doing what I came to do. So then you just need to relax your mind and let your deep urges impress you, you know, and find out what's most, you know, sometimes I call it self-entertaining, you know, what is, brings you the most childlike joy. And then at the same time, there is, I don't know if other people feel this, but it has something to do with, I don't like the word mission, but you said life purpose, sure. That there is something bigger than we could have imagined, yes. That there are opportunities to reach a lot more people than we ever thought we could, or to maybe make it innovations or inventions or something that would be like amazing to solve world problems that, you know, a few years ago, everyone would have thought was impossible.
Yes.
So if, in that regard, I think, yes, we may have this idea that something is a grand life purpose. It's mainly that way, I think, though, because it's bigger than we've been able to think about so far.
Yes. And in one sense, you could say, you know, in one sense, you could say from that ego, from that mind that tends to be driving in almost an addictive way, why me? But then from the spirit or from the soul, you could say, why not me? And maybe that could right. solve a little bit of that dissonance.
when we get rid of the fear and the, I call it the clutter now, mm-hmm. You know, and that's what my book Transparency is all about. It's just clear yourself of the stuff that is not of the soul. The soul doesn't have fear. Mm. You know, it is just totally joyful and creative and celebratory. And, you know, so it's the fears and the yes buts and the feelings of not being able to do something or being caught in sacrifice or suffering that causes us to not feel who we are. Mm. So the more we can clear, the more that genius stuff, that joyful genius part of ourselves can just kind of flow through. And I think anybody has that same level of genius inside of them if they let it come through.
Because we are the soul. And that meaning, as from the individual experience and also the collective, we are the soul.
Yeah. And in a way, you know, the more you meditate and feel into the soul, you find out that your soul is sort of the same vibration as other people's souls, that there is one soul eventually, one huge, you know, unified consciousness of the idea of individuality, if you want to call it that, you know, where we still have the concept of being a personal kind of self. But that is a shared identity, which is hard for us to grasp, you know, right now. But I think the more you meditate and open up and start to see through the surface of people's fears into what they are inside, well, you know, then you definitely can feel that oneness.
I have started to talk a lot about the ecosystem as another way to think of the universe, because I do work with nature and animals and I take inspiration from that. And in the way that you're saying you are soul rather than you have soul, I like to direct us to the fact that we are nature. We're not just in or standing on top of nature. You know, we are nature, and everything, as the Hermetic saying, as above, so below, everything in nature is how we function as well. And the ecosystem is always reaching and co-creating into our soul, which I equate with the information that's inside a seed. You know, that
right.
It's not the shell of the seed that is doing the co-creating. It's the information, the energy inside it. That's the soul. And it is one frequency that is creating the evidences or the denser
yes.
realities.
Yes. And, you know, the field that we live in, yes. you could, in a personal way, you could call it your aura, you know. And if you get in a group, it's like the collective group mind or the group feeling. you know, but it's a field of energy. And as you, you know, merge with and feel your kinship with other souls, and then you look at nature, you feel your kinship with trees and animals and insects and anything, you know, the elements.
Yes.
And you see that nature is just the field that is functioning perfectly according to the universal laws and principles, and that we're in that field and it's inside us. There's no like line anywhere that separates us out from anything. So those principles are functioning in us. And, you know, taking this back to what I was saying in the beginning, it's kind of like we have to keep reminding ourselves of this, do you know, where that's our ground of being. Everything actually is fine. Mm. You know, I'm eternal. I really can't get lost or get rejected out of anywhere because there's no outside world. You know, I belong. Mm. And so does everyone. There are ways that we veil ourselves off from the knowledge of that wonderful, I guess you would call it heaven, except that it's not out there. It's right here in us now, that harmonious state. We can block ourselves from it and suffer. Or we can clear the clutter and just be joyful and have fun being here. You know, so I think that's kind of what's happening right now, is that we are being pressed by a wave of energy that's been coming through and all year, on and off and on and off, just pushing on us. And, you know, it's kind of like when it pushes on into us, I don't know about you, but my body starts to get very vibratory and it feels like anxiety a lot of the times. It feels like I'm overly electrical, that I can't sleep, or I want to eat carbohydrates or something to kind of manage it, until I realize it's just high energy coming in. It's the next wave. And, you know, some people say you need to drink more water, go for walks, be in nature. Let yourself become more porous and let the energy move through you, and just trust your body to adjust itself to the new vibrations. But yeah, when it comes pushing in, it feels disturbing. I don't know, how are you feeling any of that?
Yes, definitely. And I am having symptoms. When that happens to me, it seems only in the last like three or so years that when that happens to me, then I start to get symptoms on my skin. And it makes sense, actually, because the skin is the largest organ of the body. And if it is sort of the crown chakra or the highest energetic experience, then it would, you know, sort of be filtering out that way. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, if we think about, like you said, it could feel like anxiety. The intense energy that we feel, that's kind of like in the neutral place. And then we could take that and filter it through fear, and that would be more anxiety. Or we could filter it through love, and that would be joy or excitement and creative excitement. But it's the base energy is the same. And so when we first experience it, the body's like, be afraid, change is a coming.
Right. It's like the horse in the starting gate. Yeah. I often feel like that. I'm ready. You know, like, when are they going to open it? But bottled up, charging up, ready to release, you know. And when that period, and that has been, it felt to me like all summer that things were sort of stuck, like snagged, like you were not allowed to move forward too much. But as the beginning of September and October now in the fall, things seem to have released, and a lot more energy can start moving forward now. Although the next thing I noticed was everybody moved forward, and then they suddenly hit this thing in the early October where it was like, wait, when something's not working here, we better go back to the drawing board and regroup. And things that we thought were going to work are not really going to work that way. And this has been happening with a lot of my colleagues and friends where, you know, we're on a roll and then, wait a minute, something's been missing. We're going to, you know, weave in this other element that we didn't notice before. So, and I think that's all natural. You know, it's like, just try to stay in the flow and be honest and say what's happening and don't get weird about it and don't be ashamed and just, you know, integrate the next thing and embrace it and see where the flow wants to take you.
I study the lunar cycles, or I'm always kind of paying attention to them. And the lunar cycles were very much aligned with that. And I kind of pay attention to them almost secondarily, because mm-hmm. then when I read about other people's experiences or proper astrologers who are saying what the energy of the moon that's being presented, and it keeps doing that. It keeps saying, like, I'll feel exactly that pattern that you just said when it went from summer to that early September to suddenly the shifting of nature as well. You know what I mean? Like, that's when the elements sort of change. And of course, we're in the southern hemisphere. That's their winter to spring, but still, the shifting really created, for a few days at least, if not a week, some inner conflict of, oh no, things are changing. And, you know, there was just sort of this momentum, and then the shift to something different was kind of fear-inducing for me at that early September point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I had a few days where I actually started questioning my entire life purpose.
Right,
like
exactly.
That I've been doing so clearly, you know, on the path and writing books and knowing what I was here for and all that. I said, wait a minute, maybe I'm not here for that. Or why do I think that? You know, maybe that's not it. And whoa. And then concurrent with that is I actually thought I might die.
Oh.
I don't know if you've ever had that feeling like, oh, wait a minute, I could be dying soon. And I actually went around my house and started making lists of my valuable things that I wanted to leave to other people. And
wow.
And then about 3 days, I went through that, and then it's like it passed. And I let go of everything, and then it kind of fluttered back in again, but I'm not holding it, you know, as an identity or a resistance or a voting for it or anything. And so that's weird. That's kind of a strange one now. It's just, it's like a detachment, but still an involvement, you know?
Yes, it's like an opportunity to become less conditional, yet more deeply connected, I guess. That's what I think about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's also a sort of a death of ambition, mm-hmm. which is strange. But also an increase in a kind of a deeper enthusiasm. So it's like enthusiasm takes over for ambition, and opening yourself to just have luck and synchronicity, and whatever wants to happen will happen. And I'm going to choose what's choosing me, you know? And
that's very powerful orientation to the flow and to the wave. I think if we're allowing ourselves to live in synchronicity and, you know, perfect synchronism with what is choosing me, I think that's really profound integration. Then can you speak to we're talking about, I'm sure a lot of people are feeling like, so it's not just me, you know, it's not just me. There is this wave, there is a shift in the energies of the grander collective energy. And so there's a purpose to that as well. Yes, what is that purpose? That there's this wave that is collective that is facilitating these movements, these transitions for us.
Well, I think there are many waves. For you know, they're just coming one after another, just like in the ocean. Mm. But you know, the frequency on the planet's been increasing for years, and it still is. So that's just life here right now. But I think a lot of it is that we are moving into a phase of, you know, transformation. Transformation of our consciousness, of our bodies, of the way life works, actually. Everything is coming into the present moment. So things are much more instantaneous. And if you try to hold on to too many things, and like with my identity, you know, like, well, okay, I don't know who I am, but I'm here, you know. But if you hold on to too much, it's almost like implode or keep you from moving. The energy will get so high that it will explode those little things, you know?
Yes.
And so I think when we see people who are going into behaviors of either they try to control life by being dominating, like narcissism, or they try to control life by being the victims, which is also a control game, you know, that if you hold those beliefs, then those things are going to cause, you know, bigger repercussions than they used to.
I was just being reminded, I guess, by spirit, as you were talking about the loss of identity and clearing the clutter, I was being reminded, which I haven't read the whole book, and no, by no means a proper student or expert on A Course in Miracles, but I know that at the very beginning, there is a line that says, nothing that is real can ever be lost, and anything that is lost is an illusion. And I'm totally paraphrasing because, again, I'm not an expert at it. But that's...
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
I absolutely agree.
Yes.
What were you... You were going to finish that?
No, that's about it. That's a, that's a... Go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, we're changing our idea about what's real.
Yes.
You know, you know, I always think for any physical reality, there's a kind of an inner energy blueprint that's made from a mixture of your ideas and thoughts and your emotions and even your soul's purpose and need. You know, some of that inner blueprint is based on truth and some of it is based on fear. And so part of what we're doing now is weeding through all that and seeing which part of this is really real to me. In my physical reality, how is it being, you know, manifesting out of the inner blueprint? If I change the inner blueprint to be more in alignment with who I really am, now what is my physical reality going to look like? You know, because it will shift very quickly now because everything's sort of in the present moment. There's possibility now for instantaneous healing, instantaneous changes, instantaneous materialization or dematerialization of things. It's getting more and more real all the time, you know? So I think the physical plane alone is not the real reality, right?
Yes.
It's the, I want to say the effluvia, the overflow of the non-physical inner blueprint. You know?
Yes.
And yeah.
Yes, because if we were, well, this is what happens when we believe that it is, or if we emphasize the physical reality being what there is, then it's pretty much a very nihilistic way to live because then it's just, well, then accumulate a lot of things. And then when you accumulate, if a person were to accumulate a lot of things, then they don't find any satisfaction. It really drives you deeper into that which is non-physical, we keep finding as the answer.
Yeah. Usually, you know, there'll have to be that bottoming out process where there's a loss of or a disillusionment, which, you know, disillusionment is a very healthy thing because you're giving up those illusions.
Yes.
And getting into what's real. But we don't like it.
It's painful. It's painful. Yeah.
You know, that's because the left brain jumps to the conclusion that, oh, I'm wrong. You know, and then it can't stand to be wrong. So if you can just let the disillusionment kind of have its way and go where it needs to go and melt away the mirages, and then you find that really core experiential, you know, it's not a thing, it's an experience, right?
Yes.
And then you can only go and fall into it and feel, and to me, it does feel very childlike. It feels like the spontaneous making of a finger painting or something, you know, like I'm just going to move over here and do this next and just, you know, have fun because I want to.
Yes.
But it's also very compassionate and loving and, you know, all those good things.
You mentioned that just a little bit ago about the feeling of feeling, that's the feeling of feeling, that's redundant, feeling caught in sacrifice and suffering. And I know that we all experience that. We're never going to sort of vibrate so far out that we don't experience that, I think, probably, possibly. So there's no shame in it, and it doesn't mean that you're sort of not a good person or a person who isn't aligned, generally speaking. But if a person were experiencing that they feel caught or they feel stuck and blocked and that kind of stuff and in sacrifice and suffering, what is your advice? What can we do? Is there anything practical or even ephemeral that you could suggest?
Well, I've just had that experience myself, dipping into this feeling of sort of being used or losing sort of the right to my own material that I've worked so hard for, you know. and what I sort of came to was that, you know, at the very end, you can't own material. Everything belongs to everyone. And yet I will be able to live my life having the amount of support I need to have to live so that I can do what I want to do here. So things will work out. And it's kind of like the idea of like needing love. You know, if you think that you need to have that from the outside world and that nobody's giving it to you, then you can feel sacrificial. You're like, I'm doing all this and nobody's appreciating me. But when you really go inside and feel yourself as the soul is just made of love, you know, and the field that the soul's in is love. And the soul is that field, do you know? And there's nothing but that. So there's no outside world where there isn't love, where there isn't that kind of consciousness. It's all a huge unified field. And when you feel that, especially like in meditation, I think is what you have to do first, is kind of get, go into those states and understand that I don't need any more love. You know, I've already got it, and I just need to play in it, and share it, and enjoy other people who have plenty and want to share it and play in it. And, you know, it's kind of a downer when you get around somebody who thinks they don't have any love, because it's a lie, you know? And that's what causes suffering, I think, and sacrifice.
Separation from the self, trying to, for a moment, believe that you aren't love. I'm trying to...
Right, that you need something in order to be yourself. Right, that being yourself is conditional. Or being happy is conditional on somebody doing something for you or to you or with you or something.
Or changing themselves and how they relate to you and, you know, a relationship, a job, a, yeah, family orient something. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's disempowering to have, or in politics. Actually, that was something I wanted to ask you. We're talking about the big shift. There's a wave that's moving, you know, co-creating with moving us, encouraging us, life purpose. And is that, do you think it is, or we don't have to talk about the details of it, but is it showing up in politics? Because that is something that people really look to, or their experience, when they're experiencing their disempowerment, they're reacting to what's going on socially, politically. And we do have in the U.S., we have a midterm voting day, election day coming up on just a few days from now, 2 days from now, actually.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying for a long time that, you know, there's this clearing process is happening in individuals and in society, in cultures, in countries, that everything that was stored in the subconscious mind, where you could just push it all down and deny it and not think about it, it can't stay there anymore because the frequency is too high for it to have a resting place. So all those little subconscious fears and blockages and, you know, aberrations are popping into the conscious mind now to be seen and known. And that means daily life, the media, you know, it's, that's our conscious mind. And in society, it's current events, you know, so it doesn't surprise me that we have the administration that we have right now, because I think it is sort of the physical manifestation of the inner blueprint of how can I say this right? That the energy on the planet is too high for people to be holding back their own flow of energy. And when people are extremely narcissistic and controlling and hateful and scared, really is what that's based on. It's based on a huge amount of fear underlying. And then other people are victims based on a lot of fear. That's the pattern. And that polarity is being brought to the surface so we can see how the two sides of that polarity relate to each other. So we're going to shoot, you know, people who are trying to immigrate into this country or whatever, you know, I mean, it's getting almost to a ridiculous point. But I remember saying in the beginning that this administration will eventually shoot itself in the foot out of the blindness that comes out of narcissism and pride and ego. You know, that it won't see what it's doing and think that it's just perfect and doing everything just right, and something they won't see what's coming. And I don't know exactly what form that will take, but I am sure that it's not going to last that long. Right. I don't think it can in the face of the kind of frequency on the planet right now, which is causing us to go more into collective consciousness and mutual support and co-creation and, you know, much more universality in terms of global consciousness. You know, there are so many themes that are coming up now that are symptoms of the new intuition age consciousness. Mm. So all the old perception is being outmoded or eclipsed bit by bit by bit, but it's happening pretty fast. So honestly, I'm just watching it. I mean, it's sickening, a lot of it, but I think it's going to be eclipsed.
It is being moved. It is that clutter that is being, that's being moved out, and it's happening naturally. I had this this young person. Well, he was 18 years old and very sensitive, sort of, you know, very spiritually aware person. I guess we would say naturally at such a young age. And so one day we were having a talk, and I was saying that when there is a great amount, I think did I read this from you? When there is a great amount of fear building up in the field, that there is also a counterbalance of love that is building up. Is this something that I read in Frequency?
Possibly. I would say that.
You don't remember always, either. I don't remember what I write.
I think that it's not even equal. I think
it's
that
not
there's
equal.
A larger amount of higher consciousness starting to happen. And it doesn't take, it's not like you have to have equal amounts, or it's right. sort of the 100th monkey syndrome. You get a certain critical mass that occurs, and then the whole thing shifts. And it doesn't take a majority of people to do it. It just takes a kind of a purity. And then those individuals get together into groups, and then those groups are now getting together into consortiums and so forth, you know, where the knowledge of these higher realities, or the, you know, what it really is the spiritual realm is in the physical realm. It always has been, but now we can feel it.
Right.
And that means when we feel it, the soul is in the body. I'm here. That means spirit's in matter also. And that means that the physical world can start functioning according to spiritual principles. Mm. So the inner blueprint is not fear-based when you start to understand that you're the soul. That makes some logical sense. and then we get demonstrations of how easy it is to think of something from the imagination and let it flow through into the physical world and materialize, and you get the pleasure of that, and then you let it go and you do some more, and you just have this constant, continual creative flow and non-attachment.
Yes.
Right? Because then that stops the flow.
Materialization and non-materialization and dematerialization, that flow, that's a flow. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fun. You know, it's like, okay, now the physical world is not just this solid thing. It's actually responsive to thought and vibration and frequency and emotion and, you know, and you can create things.
Yes.
With that. And that's like a whole new skill set.
This, and when I mentioned, when I, this young person and I were talking about this, and I said there's a buildup of love, or, you know, the positive, if you want to call it that. And he said, well, then if there's a lot of love, like if we're coming together, we're building up love, so then is there negative? Like, he's kind of getting off in his fear mind. And I said, no, there's always more love, because the field is composed of love. So that it doesn't need to actually, it doesn't need to balance love out. It is love. So, but
there's
we can
a temporary, I would maybe you call it a backlash, but you know, when the ego starts to die, when it realizes it's not in control of your life, you know, that your left brain doesn't rule everything, that it's really you're the soul, you're not your left brain. Mm. And so then the left brain becomes the servant to the soul. It's the implementer. Mm-hmm. It's not the decider, you know. And as that starts to register, the left brain goes into great resistance about that. And that's the process of ego death, is where the left brain relinquishes control over reality and allows itself to be what it's meant to be, which is the implementer. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't want to die, right? You know, so it goes through all these clever machinations about, watch politics, distractions, outrageousness, you know, anything to kind of keep people from the main point, you know. And it's amazing to watch it act out.
And it can do its job really well, almost, if we want to say, for the dark. But, you know, it can, that left brain who is in charge of organizing and making things linear and analyzing, it can pull up all kinds of evidences about why it isn't possible that you have a huge purpose, because you haven't done anything so huge so far. So then right. that's the first 30, 40, 50, whatever years that you've lived. So don't be crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a master at the negative declarative sentences. And, you know, and all that. The put down, because it doesn't want change. It wants to maintain security.
Yes.
So you can watch that those put downs. It's a master of all that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Co-opting anything good. And so this is where we have to really learn now to maintain what I've called your home frequency, or, you know, that vibration or state of being when you're the soul. And I'm in my body and I'm here right now. This is me, you know, I'm working this personality, you know, and doing it, and get centered into that state over and over and over again, because you listen to the news and you hear these awful things happening and you think, oh no, is the ego that strong that it can really influence all these people to agree with it? Well, it can influence about 30%, it looks like, you know, of people who are angry or who are under the control of that kind of consciousness, either as dominators or victims. But hopefully some of them are going to start to wise up and say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't getting us anywhere.
I'm in California, and it's so generally speaking, it's a very liberal political climate and, you know, collective consciousness. And there is something about, I mean, I guess I would maybe chart a little bit more like liberal myself too. So this, but it doesn't matter. Honestly, I like to think of myself as being fresh in every single moment. I don't care. But the victimhood is something that seems to be a little bit more of an insidious way to negatively contribute, or at least to enhance separation consciousness, I would say. And I think, mm-hmm. I say insidious because it's kind of hiding, it's kind of lurking. There's a bit of, even in our fairy tale lore about the filthy rich and the martyred poor, you know, and they're the virtuous and pious one because they are the victim. And I think that is a lower consciousness that is being, maybe that's being exposed as well. I hope that it is. And I don't mean to threat to judge anyone. I'm hoping to champion that inner home frequency in everyone. Is that something you see?
I think certainly, the downfall of the liberal side is that they get too hung up in saving victims.
Yes.
And the more conservative side is in punishing and trying to get rid of them, you know. But to me, this all hinges on this idea about suffering. And if you fight suffering to try to get rid of it, you know, like fighting victimization and saving and rescuing people, you basically add to the reality of suffering, because you have to have it in order to have your identity as a rescuer. So you have to keep it around.
Yes.
And this is all unconscious, of course. But then if you become a victim, then you're voting for suffering because that's your identity. And that's how you know yourself. And then that adds to the reality of suffering and keeps it around. So, you know, it's not that if somebody's starving, you don't feed them or, you know, help heal the sick or something like that. But as you become more awakened, perhaps is the word, I think you start to see that, wait, there's another reality beyond that polarization of victim and dominator. Mm-hmm. There's something that doesn't have suffering in it.
And it's about, it's orienting from that higher perspective of the awakened state, awakening, you orient from there. And then, like so that we want to call that right brain or intuitive, and then it gets filtered down into that left brain, which does things. But if we're letting that left brain, that which is already created, to be in charge, and then we stay in victimhood and dominance and, you know, aggressor and victim, but we come from the higher place and then say, okay, yes, of course, feed the person and you know, soothe the sick. But if we're creating the blame, then we're just staying in the unawakened perspective, really.
Yeah. And then also you don't allow, like, for instance, you know, a lot of problems like the immigrants all marching into the United States, that if you weren't trying to keep them out or feel like they're going to flood in and kill everybody or something, maybe what would happen would be a collaboration among countries.
Yes.
You know, something where everybody pitched in to try to find a mutually beneficial solution, right? That's the new kind of thinking. It's like, hey, let's do collective consciousness. Mm. See what can be done here. How can we help these people become positive contributors to the world? Because they want to get better. You know, they're not all criminals and everything. Yes. Probably some are, but they may want to get better too. Who knows?
Well, the reason that crime or anything that is an action of separation, it's because of fear, and it's you know, yeah, something that needs to be healed.
And that's right.
That's right. And so I would love to. We've solved all the world's problems. This is the last Charmed Life ever. Just listen to it again. No, but we started from the place, I think it's a perfect evolution that we started from the place of the individual feeling the huge purpose impressed upon them in this full-term pregnancy about to happen, and that there is a wave that is carrying you individually, and how that actually translates out into a larger perspective of collective consciousness. And we talked about how, what do you do when you're caught in the experience of suffering and sacrifice and blockage? And I think the answer just to turn back into that home frequency, perhaps tell people what you, if they haven't read Frequency, what is the experience of the home frequency and how does that serve the self as well as the others?
I think it's a little different for everybody, but mainly it's that feeling of, I call it your preferred state, you know, like when you're really enjoying yourself and feeling good about yourself, like I said, like the happy child doing its creative thing, or playing with an animal or something. There's this kind of unselfconscious, happy, willing to be amused state, and also very, very loving, very appreciative. Mm-hmm. But some people feel it like a golden, cheerful, soft angora quality, you know. And other people, one woman said, oh, I feel it kind of like this. She was a dancer and she was feeling, I like this wave flow, you know, that makes me feel like myself. So I think there are different ways that we attune to that state, you know. But when you're in it, you know, you're receptive, you're happy, you're appreciative, you engage, you know, you're not contracted.
Yes. And how do you advise people to be able to access that now or more consistently?
It's about mindfulness a bit, yes, where you notice the next time you get plugged in, mm-hmm, and your energy goes like this, you know, and you know, you have a contraction in your heart or your throat or whatever, and you're upset and tense and tight, and then go, wait a minute, that's not the way I like to feel. Mm. I prefer feeling, you know, whatever your thing is, loosen it up, feel cheerful. And maybe, you know, sometimes what I do is I just imagine that I am playing with a puppy or something. And then as soon as I feel that and I remember the feeling states that go along with, you know, innocent things like that, I get that way myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I'm back. You know, it doesn't take very much because your body has kind of memory of vibrational states, and it can easily shift into any of them, you know.
Yes.
So it's, you need to have a conscious shifting out of the contracted, you know, plugged in states that we get into all the time. Of course you do, because you match frequencies with other people. Yes. And then you go, wait a minute, let me get back to center, breathe, go back into the way I'd really like to feel, and run that for my own sake, because this is what I like. And nobody can make me feel bad if I don't want to.
Yes.
You know,
amen.
Take it back. Your responsibility for feeling the way you want to feel is yours.
I've been shown lately, too, the sort of the language of, if something is challenging you, that you actually use that. It's like you hack the system with the thing that is challenging you. So I tell people, if you want to start meditating consistently and having a practice, but you have this experience or this belief that I don't have time, well, then use time, hack time in order to create it. So I say, just set a timer for 10 minutes every day. You know what I mean? Like, you can find 10 minutes. You absolutely can. Sometimes your bangs don't cooperate with you, and so you have to spend 10 minutes on them, but you're going to go to work with your bangs. You know what I mean? Like, you figure it out. You take a shortcut or something.
Right.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing here too is, if you have, when we have that lower mind or that left brain that is running its mouth, that scripts and telling us about how terrible we are and the world is or whatever, that we can actually hack ourselves back into the home frequency by choosing to experience with that same mind playing with a puppy. I mean, that's just a thought. That's something to, so we can hack the experience and shift to the home frequency. And then there you are in resonance again.
And it can be very fast. It might take a while to run through it and get the habit of it, but maybe you're a dancer and you just picture yourself doing this movement, you know, that you love, and you're back, you know, or, you know, a gardener smelling the dirt or something, you know, whatever it is for you. Mm-hmm. And you can get back to it. And then I think you start to notice also the different subtle kinds of contractions that we have, whether it's a fear of some big thing or something that's an old habit to say, oh no, I don't do that. I don't participate in those kind of things, you know, or maybe it's actually not a negative kind of contraction, but where you just focus, because focusing is a contraction of sorts too, but there's movement that goes forward with it. You know, your attention flows through a focus. It's like a telescope, you know. Whereas the negative kind of contraction actually blocks the flow. You can't, it doesn't, nothing can move because you've cut it off.
Right.
You know.
Oh,
yeah.
That's fascinating.
So you can start to notice those things where you contract and then work with each one of them to turn it around.
Mm-hmm. It's like the way out is through.
Right, right. The way out is like, let's say you say, well, you know, I always use this, I don't like public speaking and I'm not a good public speaker. I'm too shy, blah, blah, blah. And you explain it to yourself. And then so that just stops you from ever even trying, right? Because you have a rule.
Yes.
A declarative statement that tells you how life is. But what if you say instead, you know, it might be interesting to do public speaking. What would it feel like if I got energy from a group? Or, you know, what would I talk about? Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you've made a pinhole and the energy can start to flow and trickle through that. And because you could get curious about it.
Curiosity. Yes, that's what curiosity is, in a sense, fearless, the opposite of fear.
Exactly.
Unless you watch a cat do it, because they're all charged up with fear at the same time.
But yeah, I mean, it is. It is that sense of that childlike joy thing again. It's like this lack of self-consciousness just suddenly needing to go and see something and follow a flow, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a great state.
It is a great state. Wow. Well, we are pretty much out of time with this show, but I felt like it went in 2 seconds for me.
Yeah, I know. It always does.
Well, thank you so much again for coming. Could you tell folks who are listening, we have it on the video, of course, how they can get in touch with you or anything else, that any way that you want to share that folks can connect with you or what you've been up to lately or moving forward with?
You know, my website is just my name, pennypierce.com. And, you know, I am available to do private sessions by phone or Skype. And there's all, you know, I have 10 books out. They're all available either through my website or on Amazon or so forth. Yeah, and there's Oracle letters on my homepage on the website. There's all kinds of material on my website.
It is. There is. And I have had a session with Penny. I'm going to book another one pretty soon, I think, too. So I look forward to that. And are you doing any other workshops coming up, or is it we're at the end of the year, perhaps?
Right now, no. Next year, we'll be doing more in Europe again. One retreat in Hungary, actually, up above the Danube outside of Budapest. Wow. So that should be pretty amazing.
Oh.
So we're working on that now and some online courses. So.
Oh, great. Well, yeah. I will be looking into all of that. That sounds amazing. And I just am so honored that you would come and share your light, your wisdom, your heart, your frequency on Charmed Life for, again, like I said, the third time. So honored.
And it's always fun talking to you.
Thank you. Yeah, of course, you as well. And so I hope maybe we'll connect again sometime, maybe in 2019. Penny, I really appreciate you. Penny Pierce, author, intuitive empath, designer as well. You're such a light in this world. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We will see you again next week, next episode. And thanks for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are.